Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
This episode discusses extremely sensitive topics, including domestic violence, rape and sexual assault, including assault of a minor, sexual violence, and murder. Listener discretion is advised. When a young mother was brutally murdered in a small town, the list of suspects was short. But even after a trial, her family was left to find justice for themselves. This week's episode is The Murder of Karina Mullen.
In the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you. Well, thanks to one of our listeners for sending this in via the form, Jamie. We really appreciate you, Jamie Jones, because we, I think, otherwise might not have heard of this case.
Truly, yeah. We look to all of you for sending in stuff that might not be covered as much in the news, but should have been for multiple reasons.
Yeah, definitely one of those cases where our jaws were on the floor researching it. And I think it several moments throughout this investigation, you kind of see this is why we should not do things that way, or this is why these oversights should be in place. So at the end of the day, it's the story of, you know, a family who does not give up on their loved one, which is so often the case in these delayed justice situations mm-hmm. where it becomes up to mom, dad, sibling, spouse, somebody who says, no, I'm going to make this my life's mission.
And it seems like it's more likely when a cop is involved.
Isn't it always? The very folks that are supposed to protect us, it's like we've not only botched the investigation, but perhaps intentionally botched the investigation. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye out for that, because this is the kind of case I think we like to cover where there are unusual, but not so unusual. It's like it seems unusual and shocking, but the fact is we don't know how many of the other cases have happened where this exact scenario played out, but the plan was effective. And yeah, so it's definitely one that's going to stick with me, I think.
Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. Karina Lynn Mullen was born September 1st, 1967 in Kirkwood, Missouri. Her parents, Claude and Patricia, raised her alongside her siblings, Heather, Dina, and Donald. Everyone called her Reenie, short for Karina. She had a daughter, Stephanie, when she was about 18. Karina and her daughter lived on a farm with her parents in Rockford, Kentucky, 10 miles outside Central City, a quiet town of about 5,000 people. Karina's loved ones remember her as a beautiful, kind-hearted young woman who would do anything in the world for anyone. She was a good daughter, a good mother, and a pretty young woman with blonde hair and an outgoing personality. She had a warmth that made people feel at ease and a generosity that showed in everything she did. She loved her family deeply and was always there for those who needed her.
This seems like a part of the country where it is just very rural, that sometimes you have to travel further for jobs or for kind of opportunities. So it becomes kind of close-knit, but also I think you're kind of yearning for something else. Like you're in your late teens, early 20s, mm-hmm. like, where am I going to go?
The big city.
Yeah.
I've never been up to that part of the country. You?
No, I mean, I'm more in Eastern Tennessee was where my family all was. I mean, mm-hmm. So not quite this area, but it seemed like folks from here would drive down to Nashville for jobs and stuff like that, where it's like you're driving 2-3 hours for work, but it's work that's going to pay you more than what you're making where you're at.
Yeah. In mid-August 1987, when she was 20, Karina moved to Central City, trying to make a life of her own. She shared an apartment with Angela Smith, another single mother raising a toddler son. To pay off a fine, Karina worked at the police station, doing clerical work and cleaning. She had been dating 19-year-old Jimmy Springer for 6 months, though their relationship was anything but stable. He had a temper, and at one point she told her parents he scrubbed her face raw with a washcloth to remove her makeup. After that incident, her parents suggested it was time to move on. Karina agreed. What no one knew, at least not openly, was that she was also romantically involved with Lieutenant Billy Fields, a married veteran officer in the Central City Police Department.
Yeah, her family explained, or her sister tells a story about, you know, seeing your sister with a red face going, what happened to you? Like, who did this to you? And, you know, it's some guy you've only been with like 6 months. Like, don't let them treat you that way. You know, your family's encouraging you to get out.
Yeah, if it's 6 months, that's already happening. It's only going to get worse. At the same time, you know you're having an affair and how violent this person is that you're with. So you've got an added layer of concern of trying to keep that from him, too.
And I wonder, too, if you think, oh, Lieutenant Billy Fields, for the Central City PD, he was second in command under the chief of police. So maybe you feel, oh, I'm safe with him, because it's my understanding Jimmy Springer worked in Nashville and would drive and be gone, you know, a couple days a week here and there. So somebody that you work with, somebody that you maybe feel safe with, given their position and their age gap. There was a pretty big age gap.
In late September, Karina made up her mind to move back home. She had packed her belongings, ready to leave. Just 2 days before she was murdered, she walked into the police station and filed a report, accusing Jimmy Springer and Jeffrey Boyd, a friend of her roommate Angela's, of drug dealing and property theft. She detailed the people involved, the locations, and how stolen goods were being moved, reporting them to another officer rather than Billy Fields.
The guy just took the report and was like, all right, I'll pass this up the chain. Thanks for letting me know. And she thinks she's done the right thing. You know, coming from a small farm outside the city, you're like, I know bad things are happening. I work at the police station. I will go and report what I know.
And I'm leaving. I'm moving back home. Yeah. So this is a safe time, perhaps, to do it. Just 2 days later, between midnight and 2 a.m. on October 2nd, 1987, Karina was attacked in her own bed. The assault was prolonged and savage. She fought back, evident from the defensive wounds on her hands and arms, but she was outmatched. Her attacker, or attackers, struck her repeatedly, fracturing bones and leaving bruises across her body. She was raped, then sodomized with an object. Afterwards, she was stabbed multiple times, leaving her bedroom covered in blood. When the attacks were over, Karina was wrapped in a blanket, carried from the apartment, and stuffed into the trunk of her 1977 Chevrolet, either unconscious or already dead. The car was then parked in a lot behind a city garage. At 9 a.m., a municipal worker noticed the car parked strangely and went to check it out. There was blood on the trunk, so the man called the police.
The question becomes, you know, she lived in an apartment complex with shared walls and shared, and there seemingly was no disturbance call to 911
screaming
overnight,
or something like a scuffle or anything of that nature.
It's almost like if people heard it, they were not going to say anything, or knew better not to say anything or whatever, especially if this the friend of the roommate is involved in some like property theft ring. It kind of makes you wonder, you know, what's going on outside, out of your own apartment.
Yeah. Or how often are people showing up and doing nefarious things that perhaps your neighbors are aware of and they don't want to get involved either. Lieutenant Billy Fields was the first officer on the scene. He opened the trunk and discovered Karina's body. Fields took control, directing officers and keeping the media at bay. He told reporters that any leads he had would be dependent on test results from the crime lab. Initial toxicology confirmed that Karina wasn't under the influence of alcohol or drugs, aside from trace amounts of cannabis and a prescription painkiller. Her cause of death was asphyxiation on her own blood due to the extent of her injuries.
That lab results kept being brought up in a lot of the initial interviews with Billy Fields, kind of saying, you know, we're waiting for the crime lab to let us know what's happening, but this is what we know so far.
This is the first time we see, too, he's on the scene and he immediately takes control of who's going to see what test results are going to get done, how that's going to get out to the media. So for whatever reason, he knew he was having an affair with her or ... he was going to be the one to control this.
Yes. And an interesting thing to show up and go, I wonder whose car this is. I think you know whose car it is because you were working with her at the very least and seeing her after work hours more likely than not. So his statements to the newspapers at the time were like, well, it was just a strangely parked car. And that's why the worker went over. And that then I got there and there was blood. And that's why we decided to open it. So like you said, he's the one that's giving the statements to the media. Mm-hmm.
Authorities questioned her roommate, Angela, her neighbors, and Jimmy Springer. Angela said the women had gone out drinking. And when they got home, Karina told Angela to leave the front door unlocked as Jimmy would be coming by later. Angela did as she was asked, then went to bed. She claimed she heard nothing else for the rest of the night.
Just given the brutality of the attack, if you are roommates sharing what was described as a paper-thin wall in these apartment complexes, this statement reads to me as lying, that you did not sleep through all this.
Unless you were so drunk that you completely passed out and, you know, had headphones on or something, I can't imagine, as you said, the brutality of the crime that nothing was heard.
Yeah. And she said, well, we were both just so drunk and so wasted. And we had done so many shots and we were so drunk, but the toxicology showed that Karina wasn't drunk.
No. Yeah. Neighbors reported hearing loud noises during the night, but no immediate follow-ups were made. The crime scene itself was processed. Over 20 pieces of evidence, including blood samples, fibers, and a possible murder weapon, were collected. A crime scene photo showed a pair of men's jeans and underwear with Lieutenant Fields present in the background. Fields told the media it was all sent to the lab for testing.
I mean, quite literally, he's like, the results will be out today on October 6, 1987. And I did not see anything else about results after that.
Yeah, that's also pretty quick turnaround time to promise something.
They kept promising like, oh, we're just waiting on the lab.
Investigators focused heavily on Springer, questioning him the day of the murder, yet no formal notes were taken, and no audio recording was made of the conversation. When he was questioned again on October 15th, he provided a signed statement, but merely admitted to coming into Karina's apartment the night of the murder, noticing blood on her door, then leaving. He searched the town for her for around an hour, then gave up and went to sleep at a friend's house.
Another statement that seems strange and unbelievable.
Even if true, what is wrong with you? Why would you search for an hour and then just be like, well, bedtime?
You know, it happens. And that's what people are like, you didn't open the bedroom door. He's like, it was dark. There was some blood. I didn't really know. I'm like,
that's all the more reason to go open the door or call the cops.
Exactly. But even a smear of blood on the outside of the door, we should be concerned. But no, he said he just went, oh, well, she must have gone somewhere and drove around a bit and then was like, I got sleepy, so I went to go to bed.
From the very beginning, Fields controlled the case, the collection of evidence, and the questioning of witnesses. In a few interviews with local news outlets, Fields promised movement once test results came back from the lab. The case stalled throughout the month of October, and no arrests were made. Fields presented himself publicly as the lead investigator working to solve Karina's murder. But the supposed test results he referenced in media interviews never seemed to surface.
And people in the town were getting worried. Meanwhile, they're like, apparently someone can be savagely attacked and murdered and nobody ever gets caught for it. So they took out, concerned citizens would take out like ads in the local paper. Like, does anybody have any tips? Like, does anybody have anything they can talk to the police about? Just because I don't blame them. I would be horrified as well.
If you think a heinous murder or murderers is roaming your streets, of course you want to see something done about it. We've seen this in other cases too, where the public is alarmed, as they should be, because they think a murderer's on the loose. Mm-hmm. Spoiler, murderers are on the loose here.
Always, right?
However, what the public doesn't know is that they are also the ones controlling the narrative. And therefore, to them, they're like, well, we know no murderers are out there roaming the streets because we're right here. Well, the public has no idea what's happened.
Yeah, the vitality of importance of local journalism, like coming back and talking to the family, talking to other people in the community and keeping the case alive. There would be all of these articles. But of course, every time they reached out to the police for some tips, the police are like, I don't know. It's just a long wait. There's a lot
waiting
of red
on
tape.
The lab test.
Yeah. And so, but good for the journalists for at least like keeping it in people's on people's radar.
Mm-hmm.
Sinisterhood will be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Jimmy Springer was arrested in late October for grand larceny after stealing a computer monitor from work. He made odd statements to his supervisors about Karina's murder when confronted, which prompted them to alert police. In a follow-up interview with Springer, police claimed that he admitted to the killing. With no other suspect, Springer was charged with capital murder on December 1, 1987. He pleaded not guilty, and a trial was set for the following year.
Yeah, he pleaded guilty to the stealing of the computer monitor from his employer in Nashville, so he had to serve out a couple months in Tennessee. And then as soon as he was done with that, they were like, all right, it's go time. Now you're going to get tried for capital murder.
That the police claimed he admitted to.
Yes, exactly. And he's like, oh, well, let me see that statement I signed.
Mm-hmm. And there's no audio recording of anything or, you know, written notes. So it's just becomes a he said, he said. And mm-hmm. one of those saids is the cops. So good luck with that one. At Springer's trial in July of 1988, the prosecution presented no forensic evidence and never mentioned blood tests, hair comparisons, or the rape kit. Two witnesses testified that they saw Springer driving Karina's car around 1:30 a.m. on the night of her murder. Billy Fields, Karina's roommate Angela Smith, and Angela's friend Jeffrey Boyd all testified in support of the state's theory. Springer was a jealous, drug-fueled man who snapped. A state crime lab technician testified that she had taken blood and loose hairs from Karina's body for testing. The local police officials had failed to provide her with any samples from Springer or anyone else for comparison. Springer testified in his own defense that officers had coerced him during the interviews and lied on the stand. The jury took 1 hour to reach their verdict. Not guilty.
That is bombshell to have the crime lab technician say, well, I was never given comparison, so there's been really no testing done. Despite those interviews that said, we're waiting. And yeah, that's probably a jaw-dropping moment for your family.
It's pretty jaw-dropping, too, that the jury in that 87 returned a not guilty verdict when you have multiple cops testifying on the stand about something.
Right. Especially, I think, too, it was having them say he confessed to us. Mm-hmm. But I think Jimmy Springer, when he got up on the stand, he was asked, like, you know, do you think the police officer lied about your confession? And Springer said, I believe he has. And he's not the first person that said something false in this case. Mm. So I think there was this reasonable doubt because as a juror, you might go, okay, well, there's several witnesses that say, you know, they were together and that Jimmy was going to come over. But then you hear the test results don't match the facts because Angela testified saying, oh, we were super high on Valium and alcohol. And then I went to sleep and all this kind of stuff that it does not met out in the toxicology. Mm-hmm. And then you also see that the forensics haven't been tested. And like you said, DNA was not a huge thing in 1987. That was just they could have at least said like the hairs match or the blood type matches. So you're right for a 1987 jury to go, we do have reasonable doubt.
Mm-hmm. Springer stayed in Central City after his acquittal, He got married and worked as a courier driver. He told the Messenger Inquirer he struggled with nightmares about Karina's death. He also told the paper,
Billy Fields and Sheriff Roadblock wave or say hi to me when they see me now. I just don't say anything and go on. Yeah, fucking see these people?
Yeah, it's a that's a bold move to stay in the same town and get married. And I say that because it'd be hard to be the wife of someone that was living in the same town after a trial like this.
That at the very least, you're like, he admitted to being at the crime scene the night of the murder, at the least. But when this all came out, it seemed like the prosecutor just said, I don't have any quarrel with the job the police did. You know, they tried, but he was just so good at doing this murder, almost kind of trying to continue to frame this person who's been acquitted for it. But like you said, you must really not be able to get out of town, that this is where you stay now.
True. Yeah. And you also wonder, why is the prosecutor just kind of rolling over?
It was weird. The prosecutor said, oh, the only blood was from the victim. There was no evidence that the perpetrator was injured in the episode. So that's a moot point to test anything. But again, it's like, are you saying that or are police investigators telling you that's why and that that's right? And now you look like a jackass going and giving these interviews.
Or are you getting paid under the table or is somebody scratching your back because you scratch theirs?
Right. Yeah.
Devastated by the verdict, the Mullins began working nonstop to seek justice for their daughter and granddaughter. They got Karina's car back from police in August of 1988. Inside, her father found a knife covered in blood and hair underneath the driver's seat. Immediately, Claude requested that the Kentucky State Police look into the case. In September, the agency agreed. Lieutenant Fields remained involved, however. Karina's sister, Heather, told A&E that Fields would visit for coffee and assure them the case was being worked. He even took Claude out to search for clues. Even so, there was little movement for months.
And these people were just wrecked. You know, they said, like, we're not doing too good in interviews. They're like, we're trying to make it day by day. Like, I can't express how much I miss her. But at the end of the day, their granddaughter, Stephanie, was so little. Mm. And they were like, this is what keeps us going. Like, she's the reason all this is being done. We want to look her in the face and say, we did everything we could for your mom because you were too little. I was like, damn. Dedication.
It's like some Dear Zachary stuff right there.
Right.
I have a question.
Yeah.
When a car is taken in for processing and a murder, they don't clean it before giving it back to the victim's family? Take a murder weapon out?
Great question. It was wild that this was returned in the condition it was. I mean, I don't know that they do clean it out unless they tell you, you know, you tell them you want them to or That's you go crazy. Take it somewhere. But yeah, it is wild. Claude's like, I mean, it was kind of between the driver's seat and the center console, I guess. So then the police later, this obviously is made public. So then the police have to backpedal in the news and are like, well, it's possible that it got overlooked. You know, it was lodged down in the seat. It's possible that we mixed it. Bitch, your job is to go through every nook and cranny of that to try to find before you put a person on fucking trial.
There's also visible blood and hair. I mean, it was as if you just handed them over an entire box of evidence, luckily.
Yeah.
But also, what kind of shoddy police work is that?
No, seriously. And you know, we sort of said in one line, like, Claude asked for the state police to get involved. They agreed. But in reality, Claude was like, it was such red tape. There was so much paperwork for us to have to do this. And I think finding a knife or finding something that has not been brought up at trial is, I think, the thing that, you know, pushes it over the edge to get another crew to look at it. But the state police are like, well, we're now on it so late. Like, it's going to be tough for us. So it starts to be, the family gets told, like, oh, well, we, the police and authorities in charge, have created a lot of problems for you. So here's another one. And you're like, you caused it by not being thorough.
Yeah. No, that's wild. I know that in homes or businesses, if a crime occurs, you as the family are responsible for calling and getting people to come out and clean that up, which I think is terrible. I feel like that should be something that, I don't know if you pass a bill or what, but to put the onus on grieving family to have their loved one's remains taken care of or like a bloody crime scene is crazy to me. And to give a bloody car back with a murder weapon in it, it seems like not only is it just heinous, but you're screwing yourself over as the police, because now, like, it's out there that you really fucked this up.
Right? Like, I'm going to go call everybody else that's above you because you really fucked this up. No, I agree with you. On the crime scene cleanup, it would be a bill where that would be covered by, like, a state victims compensation fund. I think that'd be a really great use of resources, given that it is re-victimizing a family that's already been victimized once, to go like, anyway, now you have to detail this car. And by the way, that's your baby girl's blood all over it. Good luck
with
the trunk.
That's the knife that was used to kill her. I mean,
yes,
it's
horrific.
There's so much that is left with a grieving family after the crime that no one is there to hold their hand through a lot of it, you know?
Right, right.
That needs to change.
They're more funding for, like, victims advocates, like folks that would say, so that you're not Claude and Patricia sitting at your dining table going, well, what paperwork do we fill out to even ask the FBI to look at this or ask the state police to look at this? Like, they didn't have the internet back, you know, it's 1987. You're probably looking at fucking stuff in the phone book to try to call the local FBI or whatever. So not only them, Jimmy Springer's mom was also calling the state attorney general, because she was like, my son did not do this, but somebody killed Corina Mullen and you all need to do something about it. And she's like, the Mullins don't want to talk to me, but I am an advocate for this girl because I knew her. She dated my son.
Yeah.
Like, well, your son was also kind of abusive to her.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think you probably feel a little bit of guilt too. But you're right. A victim's advocate could help foster those connections to either a cleanup company, the next jurisdiction agency that needs to be looking at the case.
And they do have victim's advocates that do that.
Beyond.
I don't know that back then they were as prevalent as maybe they are now.
And I don't know that they would hold your hand through that process. It might not fall under their scope, their purview, to say this is how you get the FBI involved.
Mm-hmm. In 1990, Deputy Terry Arnott of the Muhlenberg County Sheriff's Office began investigating, making good on a campaign promise of his newly elected supervisor, Sheriff Wayne Moore. Arnett started by requesting all the evidence from the Central City Police Department. He was told they had lost all of it in just 2 years. Arnett then began rebuilding the case from scratch and running down leads on his own. In the local paper, he asked for the public's help to find Corina's, quote, killer or killers.
And Wayne Moore was kind of a character. He was laid off from working in the mines, zero experience in law enforcement. He's like, I'm an outsider, but I've been reading the paper. And he said, the crimes nowadays are here today, gone tomorrow. Guess what? The Mullen family hasn't forgotten what happened, and neither have I. Someone, he says this on record to a newspaper, someone is covering something up. There has to be something done about this murder. And he won by, like, a large percentage. And then he, one of the first things he did in office was, everybody in the sheriff's department should be trained in investigative techniques. Because he's like, why are we a criminal law enforcement department? And he's like, I want assistants to be trained because I want everybody to handle everything well. So for an outsider, he came in going like, literally, there's a new sheriff in town.
For
this
real.
This is how I'm doing it. I came up from the mines, bitch. Like, this is what I'm doing.
I've been
now.
Underground just thinking about this. Sometimes it takes an outsider that has, like, a fresh set of eyes and really is can see things unbiased.
Mm-hmm. Truly, it made me think of the sheriff that sort of took over later years in the Kristen Smart case, who was like, get out of the way. Something's going on here.
This could have been solved a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sinisterhood will be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience, has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Once word got around that someone was poking around the cold case, anonymous calls rang into Moore's office, warning the sheriff.
Leave things alone or somebody's fixing to tear your ass up.
One caller warned Moore he'd end up in a nearby river if he didn't back off. Moore told the caller,
I can swim,
and hung up. When asked about threats to his family, Moore explained he wasn't worried, saying,
I believe in shooting back.
The sheriff indicated the calls were motivated by the real culprit's fear, telling the paper,
people are starting to sweat. I think some people are getting really scared. We're in too deep to back out now.
Because you realize, oh, I'm right. If I'm getting these threatening calls, something has been covered up. Somebody doesn't want somebody digging into this.
Hell yeah. I mean, the headline on that article was like, hell or high water won't stop me. New sheriff is on the case. And I think if you are the persons or persons responsible, you're probably drenched in sweat. Like that fucking Jordan Peele meme. Just like, this guy is not only interested in solving this, dedicating resources to solving it, and also training his whole staff to be able to solve this. Like, your days are numbered.
He's also not backing down to your threats.
No, God, can you, if you don't stop it, you're going to end up in the river. He's like, I can swim, bitch, and then hung up. Like, and then goes to the newspaper. By the way, they've been threatening me. I want you to print this whole thing. I'm going to shoot him back. I was like, sometimes you need an outsider from the mines to come up.
Yeah, sometimes that's the type of sheriff you need. Maybe all the time is that's the type of sheriff you need. Arnett continued accumulating evidence and in 1992 requested that the FBI get involved. The Bureau went over Karina's car with cutting-edge lasers and found bloody handprints on the outside of the trunk, which were sent for testing. The Mullins were thrilled to have any movement in the case, with Claude telling the newspaper,
it's amazing to finally have gotten somewhere after 4 years. I feel good for the first time in 4 years.
Sweet papa.
I know. And Moore is right. Like, it's there today, gone tomorrow for everybody else. Like, or it's like, oh, there's an update in the Karina Mullen case, like in my local newspaper. And for Claude, it's literally every single day he's every waiting waking for an update. Second. Every day.
Again, there's bloody handprints on the trunk of this car that somehow somebody missed along with the murder weapon inside.
Well, I think much like you are such an exalted jurist, Wayne Moore is an exalted sheriff because he said, if this had been handled properly in the first place, the case would have been closed and we would have had a conviction. Just straight out, like, the FBI could be in here is to send a sign that we are not going to stop. And I'm like, this man is unstoppable. He's like Martha Stewart. I cannot be defeated.
I cannot be defeated or destroyed. Billy Fields retired suddenly in early of May of 1992, citing personal reasons. This came after Fields was put on administrative leave pending an investigation, though the details were not made public. He complained to the local news that rumors of his involvement in Karina's murder drove him from his job. He denied any connection, saying,
I knew the girl, I knew who she was, but that was the extent of it. At the time, I didn't even know whose car that was when I called up there that morning.
Fields asked to be left alone so he could get on with his life, saying he suffered blackouts due to stress. At the time, a state police investigator who had previously checked into Fields' involvement told the Messenger Inquirer,
all the rumors about him are just that, as far as I'm concerned. Billy was a good worker, a dedicated person.
It sounds like there's a lot of sus activity going on around him.
Right away. I mean, as soon as it's like the FBI has been called in, he's like, I will be retiring
personal
soon.
Personal reasons.
They're so personal.
And also, what's the other investigation that's going on around you that nobody gave any information about?
Like, what did they find that put you on administrative leave that probably it was better for you to retire so that you were not forced to resign in disgrace?
I imagine it was one of those things of, we're going to give you the opportunity to retire, but really, you're being fired.
Yeah, this is going refired. All the way. Yeah, refired.
That same year, Arnett made a startling discovery that explained why none of the forensic evidence had been tested. Billy Fields. The now retired lieutenant had specifically requested in writing that the crime lab return it all to his office, untested. Arnett could not find where the evidence went after this request.
But that was the bag that when he called day one, they go, well, we lost it. It's gone. He's like, the pants, the underwear, the blood samples, the hair samples, the rape kit. All of it, they're like, I don't know where it went.
I know where it went. Straight to Lieutenant Fields' desk and then probably in the trash, in an incinerator, or buried somewhere.
He set a big-ass fire behind his house or something.
Arnett worked diligently on the investigation for over a decade, collecting a trove of evidence to support his shocking theory of conspiracy and cover-up. His efforts were cut short in 2004 when he was diagnosed with cancer. Arnett died the next year, but not before handing everything he had to Detective Damon Fleming of the Kentucky State Police. Well,
damn,
his work was not in vain because he was like, I can't continue this, but here, and that's so important for when people are so dedicated to a case like this. And then, you know, everyone has their own time, but he was like, somebody is going to solve this. Don't let this go. Here's everything.
You love to see that where you're right. It's like bigger than me. Like, yeah. This is something I spent a lot of time on. And even though I'm not going to be able to see the end of the race, like, here, you take it. Like, yeah. It's like a relay race.
It shows you it's like not about him getting the credit or solving this. It's for the family and Karina to get justice and for shit to be exposed. It's corrupt. That's going on.
Right. Lock up. Very dangerous, very violent people.
In 2005, while working an unrelated case, a state police detective met a woman named Samantha who had information on an unsolved Central City murder. She was introduced to Detective Fleming. Through tears, Samantha explained what happened back in 1987. Just 16 years old, Samantha was alone on the street late that night when two men she later identified as Jeffrey Boyd and Billy Fields kidnapped her and drove her to Karina's apartment. She overheard Fields shout at Karina about
opening your mouth,
saying he would make sure
you got what you deserved.
Then she saw Fields, Boyd, and two other men torture, rape, and kill Karina. They raped Samantha too and threatened her to keep quiet. Karina's roommate, Angela, hid in the next room, crying. Karina, either dead or unconscious, was put in the trunk of her own car. Fields ordered Samantha to drive Karina's car to the municipal garage, and she obeyed. When she arrived around sunrise, Boyd was already waiting. Samantha parked the car, jumped out, and immediately ran home. After that, she avoided contact with the others involved. At the time, the only person she confided in was her adoptive mother.
This is, for both women, a worst nightmare scenario.
Truly. You start to see, well, the original details were like, the car was parked funny, probably because a 16-year-old that had just been raped and tortured was driving it with a body in the trunk. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're out of your head and then
jump out and run off.
Yeah. Luckily, she was able to escape and ran off. But the just brutal abuse, sexual assault, trauma that these women endured. And if we recall, Angela in the beginning said, you know, she went to bed, didn't hear a thing. Mm-hmm. And now it comes out she was in her room and could hear it, obviously, because she was crying.
Well, and the person who interviewed Angela about her involvement in the crime was Billy Fields.
Yeah.
So I think the person who killed another person in front of you, sitting across from you going, so what happened the night that Karina was killed? Why don't you tell me right now and I'll write it down. Was it you guys got really drunk and then you passed out and then that's all you have that you didn't hear anything else? And Angela's like, mm-hmm. And I would love to testify about that.
Yeah.
Because again, it's a small town of 5,000 people. The second in command of the police department is running a drug ring and a theft ring and also now has killed someone in front of you.
Yeah, I wouldn't open my mouth either. I would be very, very scared to do that.
No, and it's like he, I'm sure, targeted these people because he knew that they were vulnerable and would not challenge him and would not try to, you know, go against him.
Samantha was eventually able to identify the men responsible as Lieutenant Billy Fields, Jeffrey Boyd, and Jimmy Kramer, plus Karina's boyfriend, Jimmy Springer, who had been there but was forced to take part, Samantha said. So he was there.
Again.
Maybe there's a grain of truth and he arrived and saw blood on the door and entered. But after that, he was around for the sexual assault and killing.
Yeah. I mean, that's she said that although he was present at the crime, he was not a willing participant. She said that she did not see Jimmy hit her and that he was trying to help Karina, but was not able to help. But and that was in her initial recorded statements. Later at trial, she said he was she continued that same story and said he really was trying to help her. He was not a willing participant. The other three defendants made him essentially attack her while they all watched.
Yeah.
And again, you're the 16-year-old girl that just got snatched up off the street in the room while all this is happening, and you're just like, that's going to be me next. Like,
yeah. Oh, for sure. You're going to do whatever you can to try and get out of there alive.
Mm-hmm.
Re-interviewing the witnesses, Fleming learned Karina had confided in neighbor Edna McGee Eves that she thought she was pregnant with Fields' child. Edna often saw Fields' cruiser at Karina's apartment, including on the night of the murder. That night, she saw Karina's car backed in beside the police vehicle, with Karina's trunk open. The single mother living alone felt she may have seen something important, but when Billy Fields came to interview her the next day, she understood that for her and her child's safety, she had better not speak up. Now that Fleming was asking the questions, Edna felt safer speaking on record.
But yeah, you fucking know that something horrible happened to your neighbor. You know she's with the police lieutenant. And the next morning when the knock, knock, knock comes on your door to go, did you hear anything last night? Did you see anything last night? You're not going to be like, yeah, I saw your car parked directly next to hers. And you were over there a lot. And she also thought she was pregnant with your kid. And I know you're married. So things are probably not good. I think you open the door and go, hi, Lieutenant Fields. Would you like a cup of coffee? I heard and saw nothing. Have a great day. Thank you. Bye.
If she saw his car over there all the time, too, it would, you know, it's not unreasonable to think she also heard fighting and other stuff going on. But like you said, we now have three single moms that are either living together right next door, and these men know that they can take advantage of that. They're not going to say anything.
Yeah, it's like, well, I might hurt you or that little kid you got living with you. And it's like a mom's going to do anything to protect their kid. So it's just that is every step of the way. Billy Fields is such a monster. And it's so frightening to think that a person that is capable of this amount of savage violence then can mask on news interviews going, well, we're trying everything we can to find who did this.
And go out and solve other crimes. Yes. Or, you know, he's the one showing up when you call the cops after he just killed somebody.
It's eerie.
Another witness named Jimmy Gunn had called police the day before the murder, reporting that he saw Boyd threaten Karina outside a local diner at gunpoint, warning her,
bitch, you'll die tonight.
Gunn was shocked that even while the police station was across the street, it took a while for anyone to show up. In the meantime, Boyd's mother came by the diner and took a small object from him, which Gunn believed was a gun. When Lieutenant Fields arrived, Boyd feigned innocence, and with no weapon on him, Fields let Boyd go. Fleming also discovered that on the night of her murder, three different witnesses had seen Boyd and Fields walking together in the early morning hours near the place where Karina's car was dumped.
I mean, if this is all in, you know, some of Sheriff Wayne Moore's deputies, you know, Detective Arnett's notes, and now Fleming is discovering, like, even more and peeling all these layers, of course, it's like what Moore said from the beginning was right. There's a conspiracy. It's more than one person involved, and it's a cover-up. There is something more going on, which coming out of the gate as the new sheriff, you kind of sound a little extreme, but it was an extreme circumstance. Yeah. And in this case, like standing up for what you think is the right thing to do, because this was happening in plain sight. Like this guy goes, he said he was going to kill her in front of this diner. The cops showed up. They like hugged each other.
Yeah.
Nobody got arrested.
That's the thing too, is, I mean, for over a decade, these men all got away with it because they were running the show, and it was so brazen and like not even trying to hide stuff. Really? You know, I mean, like openly, like having friendly relationships with people, the car being sent back. It was like nobody really took it seriously that they would even be looked at because they were in charge. So it was very sloppy.
Yeah, it was almost like, well, she's just like some throwaway girl. Who cares? So whatever. And then thinking, I'm going to just get away with covering it up because no one cares, but not understanding like these dedicated parents, which again, now you're re-victimizing Claude and Patricia, who are like, our daughter and granddaughter deserve to know what happened. Like, it deserved justice.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, on the one hand, when a competent law enforcement official goes in to look at the files, they can say exactly what we're seeing now of like, oh, holy shit, this was botched from the jump. But it takes so long to even get in those hands.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like earlier oversight is key. Sinister Hood will be right back. Sinister Hood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way.
Visit progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Having worked on the case for just 5 months, Fleming then turned his attention to the forensic evidence, including Karina's rape kit, which was never tested. Among the case files, Fleming found his smoking gun, a hand-signed evidence log showing definitively that Fields was the last one to receive all the untested forensic materials returned from the lab before they disappeared entirely.
So now you literally have a message from him to the lab saying, "Do not test." And then you have a sheet where it says, "Untested materials accepted by Billy Fields."
I don't know the, the chain of command with stuff. I imagine he's got, he's over the people testing the evidence. However, perhaps those two things should be two separate entities, because if I was supposed to be testing this and got it and it was like, "Don't test it," my first question would be like, why?
Right, exactly. Well, this is the early days of kind of forensic evidence, right? And there was not as robust of a kind of a regulatory structure around it to say, like, all rape kits must be tested within 30 days. And it is absolutely not a discretionary decision. Like, if someone has been raped and there is a rape kit, go and test it right away. And that thing is why, yes, mandatory, and why it's so vital to have this push that we've seen in the last few years to end the backlog of untested rape kits, because situations like this happen where, now, of course, this was destroyed evidence. So a separate issue of the rape kit should not be optionally tested. It should be mandatorily tested. And also, they're now in a lot of jurisdictions, I believe Kentucky is one of them, forensic requests are all digitally tracked. So it's like almost like a, not a CRM system, but like a system that literally shows received now, not just a sheet of paper that somebody could sign and it could just get lost. But it's like horrible. The
post office when you're like, where's my package? And you can see like it was checked in here, then it went here. So there's a log of who had it last.
Yes, that is. And really that came about like kind of in the early 2000s and beyond, when states were getting these, like you said earlier, of like, I don't know if it's a bill that get passed or whatnot, but it was these victims going, this is why we were victimized and how we were victimized. This type of law could help us and this type of action could help us. And so I think all states should completely clear out their backlog.
Yeah.
And that should be a high budgetary priority, because I think it you're never going to test a rape kit and get a hit on a serial rapist and be like, I wish that guy was still on the street.
Right.
Like, it's only a positive thing.
Yes,
so.
Nothing bad will come of it unless you're the person that raped her and you don't want that coming out.
Yes, which in this case, that's the person that signed the evidence log and said, I will take this with me, no worries. And being second in command, nobody underneath them argued. And I want to know where the fuck the police chief was this whole time. But if you barely have any homicides, you're kind of like, well, he seems like he knows what he's doing. And, you know, I've had no complaints.
A boys club, they've all... The cop club of having each other's back. And even if maybe you think something's going on, you don't say anything.
Right. You think like, oh, well, I don't want to break up the brotherhood.
Yeah, exactly. On September 15th, 2006, Karina's mother, Patricia, passed away and was buried next to her daughter. A few weeks later, on November 6th, police arrested Billy Fields, Jeffrey Boyd, Jimmy Kramer, Jimmy Springer, and Karina's roommate, Angela. After a long, nearly 20-year wait for justice, the Mullins finally had answers. The timing seemed divine, coming just a day before Karina's mother's birthday, and right as Karina's daughter, Stephanie, now 21, was expecting her first child. Claude Mullen told the Messenger Inquirer,
I'm tickled to death. We've waited a lot of years. My wife passed away 5 weeks ago, and that's what hurts. It was 5 weeks too early. I wish she could have waited a bit longer.
That does hurt. But at least you know that while she wasn't alive to see it happen, that it did happen. Mm-hmm. And when you see now, Stephanie is 21 and just had her first kid. And she was a toddler when this happened. Never knew her mom.
Mm-mm.
Grew up not knowing what happened. But no one in that family stopped fighting for her.
Yeah. To think an entire lifetime mm-hmm. literally was lived in the amount of time it was for Karina's life to be stolen and for her daughter to bring new life into the world. And Claude said, you know, in addition to it was 5 weeks too early, he said, Patricia and I always said, whoever passed away first, like, go get him. Like, make sure that this is going to be solved, kind of like spiritually. And I'm sure it hurts, though, not being able to share that joy of relief of, you know, finally, this is kind of not quite over, but at least now we have answers. We were not crazy. And oh my God, it was the guy that was having coffee with us at our fucking dining table is the one that did this.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a lot to go through alone. I mean, he's not alone, obviously, but you know, without your spouse.
But definitely. Still, definitely, when you've been together for 20 years trying to figure mm-hmm. this out and it kind of all unravels a month too late, that's a hard pill to swallow. Fields was charged with murder, first degree rape, kidnapping, sodomy, and tampering with evidence. Boyd got murder, first degree rape, and kidnapping. Kramer got first degree manslaughter, rape, and kidnapping. Springer couldn't be charged with murder due to double jeopardy. Instead, police charged him with complicity to rape, kidnapping, and murder. Angela was charged with the same, though hers were dropped in exchange for her testimony against the perpetrators. Instead, she was charged with perjury for lying on the stand during Springer's first trial.
Which I think you can understand why she would have lied.
Certainly, and I'm glad that her charges were dropped because I think that she was also a victim in this.
No, it sounds like it. But Jimmy Springer being tried for murder initially, I wonder if sort of Billy Fields' plan was, you know, given that Springer was present, you know, we're going to pin it all on him. However, you don't have the forensic evidence to back it up. And then even if later on it all comes out, like he's already been tried for it and he can still get charged with, and he was, you know, complicity, which is similar to like accessory in other jurisdictions. But I think that, you know, their idea was, hey, this is a 19-year-old boy. We can just pin it all on him. It'll be fine. And thankfully, the jury didn't buy it. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you'd have three violent murderers just loose. And it was bad enough they were loose for as long as they were.
Yeah. Yeah. They, I don't think they thought the jury was going to say not guilty. I think they really thought they had just swept all this under the rug and were scot-free.
They're like, we got a couple of cops testifying. We mm-hmm. got the roommate testifying. But it does not always go well to have the defendant testify. But it sounds like in this case, at least it did for him to open up the door of there's something going on. Like mm-hmm. the police have been lying to me, which then I think the later investigators are like, this kid, that's like 19-year-old. I don't think he like had this elaborate murder plan with like a car and dragging her downstairs and no one would have seen. You know, it does not track. So I'm glad that he was still charged with something, even though he was acquitted the first time.
On April 21st, 2009, Fields, Boyd, and Kramer finally went to trial. The prosecution presented a compelling motive. Karina found out about the drug and stolen property ring that Jeffrey Boyd seemingly ran. She reported this to police, not knowing that Boyd's partner in the scheme to move cocaine into rural areas was none other than Lieutenant Billy Fields. Between the possible pregnancy, which would have presented problems for the married lieutenant, and reporting what she knew of the drug ring to an officer who was not involved in the operations, Fields decided Karina had to die.
And I'm sure it was the fact that Officer Scott, this unrelated third-party police officer, comes up to Fields going, hey, you know, the file clerk girl, Karina, just came in and told me she thinks Jeffrey Boyd is running a drug and stolen property ring kind of partially out of her apartment with that girl, Angela. You hear anything about that? And Billy Fields is like, let me just take that mm-hmm. report and handle it myself.
It's the whole thing just sucks. It's just shitty cops doing shitty stuff.
Right.
And it's people like, in power that shouldn't be.
Where is that oversight?
Mm-hmm. When pressed about tampering with evidence on the stand, Fields denied everything. Samantha testified, facing her attackers in court. The defense pressed her about why she hadn't come forward sooner. In fact, in the time between the murder and trial, her sister had dated Kramer and her father worked with him. The defense suggested Samantha had fabricated everything. She explained that although she told her mother what happened that night, she understood these were powerful men who wouldn't let her live if she ever revealed the truth to anyone else. Karina's roommate Angela also testified, corroborating Samantha's story and admitting that she lied at Springer's first trial.
And I think that's way more powerful to have these two women that were there and saw what happened versus Billy Fields, nuh-uh, I never did any of that. It's like, okay, well, explain why you said don't test it. Explain why you said I'll take the evidence and then it just got lost.
Also, like, fuck the prosecution for being like, why didn't you come forward sooner? I hate that shit. It's like, you know the answer to that. You're going to, if you want me to say it, I will, because these men are killers and I was 16 and a minor and I was, they had just raped me. Like, do you want me to, you already know the answer to why I didn't come forward. So you're kind of opening it up as the defense of being like, well, now she gets to rattle off all the horrible things that happened that prevented her from coming forward.
Right. Why you were afraid of them. And what, I mean, I think it's pretty apparent on the surface why you would be afraid of them is they literally snatched you up off of the street. But that I can see if years after this happened and you've seen that with your own two eyes, Billy Fields and Jeffrey Boyd's literally disappeared a woman that you knew, like literally not got caught for it. And then your dad's like, hey, I'm going to go work with this guy. And you're like, just me, just don't anywhere alone with him. Like, you might not go, hey, Dad, I want you to know there was actually this horrible murder just because they snatched you off the street.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that could easily have just, you're next.
And her sister could have also been next.
Goddamn.
You got to give some kind of heads up to your sister.
You're like, just break up with him. I just don't like
just
him.
Just trust me on this one.
Sinisterhood will be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
L-E-T-E-N-P-C. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
The jury found the defendants guilty on all charges. Fields and Boyd got life without parole, while Kramer got a total of 60 years. In 2011, Fields, Boyd, and Kramer tried to appeal their convictions, but were unsuccessful. They are currently incarcerated in Kentucky. After the verdict, Karina's family told News 14 what it meant to them after such a long wait. Karina's sister, Heather, explained,
We had a complete sigh of relief when the guilty verdict came about.
For their father, Claude, a long road toward justice came to an end, with Claude telling reporters he was feeling
more peaceful, really. We can get on with life and I won't have to think about this all the time.
So what do we think?
Man, you don't have to think about it all the time, but I bet it stays on your heart forever.
Yeah, you don't have to think about trying to find the killer and getting justice, but what happened will never leave you. Mm-hmm. And it's great that justice finally came about. Shitty that it took 2 decades plus for that to happen because cops protecting cops and cops protecting criminals that they're working with.
Yeah, greed, just wanting to dip his finger in the pie. I think, you know, Lieutenant Field sees, hey, there's a scumbag out here running guns and stolen property and drugs. I could either arrest him or make my own money from it and then sort of be Mr. Big Shit, which is what I think was part of his impetus for this, is that he wanted to feel like he was running the whole show. And to the point of, I can kill someone and get away with it.
Yeah. Feeling untouchable because of your position and everything and intimidating multiple people. It's a horrible case all around. Them kidnapping Samantha, I wonder, did they think, like, we're going to have her play a role in this and make her drive the car and went out looking for someone like that? Were they just like, we want to attack somebody else tonight too? There's a girl, let's grab her.
Yeah, maybe it was like, if case anybody, because it is a small town, you know, in case anybody sees her car being driven and it's a girl that looks like her, you know, plausible True. Deniability to like dump her car somewhere. But yeah, it does seem that the person who broke the case wide open is this person that they grabbed off the street and chose to involve in their plan.
Yeah.
And, you know, you never want to be grateful that something horrific happened. And perhaps the case would have been solved but for that. But it seems like Samantha really was this like linchpin in the case that years later, being able to talk to, I think, a state police detective going like, well, I have some information about a small town murder, but I can't tell anybody because this small town is corrupt as fuck. Mm-hmm. And to have a detective go, no, let me pass this on, because I think somebody just took that case over. But
yeah,
it's this whole case is like a relay race of justice. Like I said, like her parents never gave up, so they would always continue to talk about it. Local journalists would write about it. And because the local journalists wrote about it, this unemployed miner, M-I-N-E-R, from the mines, is like, fuck that. I'm going to solve this. I'm going to be the one to solve it. And then the deputy under him's like, yeah, man, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do work on this so hard, even though I know I'm going to die and I might not be the one to solve it. And then the next guy taking it and going, I'm going to treat this like it is day one of the cold case, is what Detective Fleming said. He's like, I started from scratch. I was like, I am going to pretend I'm the first one on the scene, like completely fresh mind. Him, I think, putting that much energy into it is how he was able to, you can't just go off of Samantha's statement, right? But he was able to build a case so that when this person comes forward and Samantha is willing to talk, she is now corroborated, going and talking to Angela. Angela is willing to tell the truth. So I feel like it's horrific that her family had to wait so long. I think it could very easily have been that her family would never have had justice. This would never have been solved. But for the positive effects of like little good deeds that the people did without wanting to be the standard, like my ego wants me to be the one that solves this. It was like, I'm just here to help do my job. And what can I do in this case as best I can do it for as long as I can do it? And that's what I'm going to do. And that's the two differences. It's like, this is like the Chris Regan case where, you know, Detective Frizzo is like, no, I'm going to solve this. Or like the Kristen Smart case where it takes an impassioned person going, no, I see something here. I'm going to follow the truth. And I think oftentimes these can be very crushing and emotionally, damaging cases, right? Because we're like, this is so much horrific violence. And it is. And I think it could have been even more painful for her family to have no clue what happened, no idea why. But because they wouldn't give up and the other people kind of heard their call to action and answered it, you kind of just see the effects of those good deeds, even if, you know, you don't live to see them.
And the irony that Samantha, who they involved in this so long ago, was really, like you said, the linchpin kind of in the whole case. The thing I wrote down earlier that I didn't want to forget to talk about, well, we kind of discussed it, but again, with just like the shoddiness of the police work, like if you know your lieutenant feels and you're like, I know what happened, would you not have that car detailed and like cleaned with a fine tooth comb to make sure that you're not sending evidence back to her family? I just don't get it.
Yeah, I think the only thing that makes sense is that Billy Fields thought he was untouchable and that they were just some, you know, corn fed hicks out on a farm somewhere and we're not going to do anything about it. Was like, who cares? He treated her like trash. He threw her in the back of her car and dumped her in a parking lot. He just thought that he was better above, smarter than these people and could do whatever he wants and treated them however he wanted. And I think on the other hand, that's why we need to have legal standards of all rape kits are tested, period. We don't care what the investigating officer wants to do or doesn't want to do. Like, they will be tested.
Yeah.
And there will be a digital chain of custody to show who got what and what got scanned and what condition it was in when it got scanned and all that stuff. And every state should have a law like that, both of those types of laws, but every state does not have a law like that. So check wherever you live, state, country, whatever. And I feel like laws like these are a great use of taxpayer resources because, like I said, they're taking horrible people off the streets. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, it would have been taking a horrible lieutenant off the force. He got to stay a cop for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I think in addition to those laws, every state should also have, or country, no statute of limitations on rape. So we got a lot of work to do in that area for sure.
Most definitely. But it's, I feel like cases like this can really, you feel like this woman was killed for nothing unless like her parents have said, you know, we want to see this justice done. We want to see these perpetrators off the street. And then from that saying, other women shouldn't have to suffer like Karina and shouldn't, because there was no police oversight that when she went and did the right thing, which is to report a crime, that then she is killed for it. Like it's the fucking mafia.
Yeah.
So what's that like oversight on law enforcement jurisdictions and making it easy for citizens to be able to whistleblow essentially and kind of go like, I've reported this and nothing happened. You know, I need to go above their heads.
Well, yeah. And she couldn't have known that he was involved, and the cop she told couldn't have known that. Mm-mm. So he thought he was doing what he was supposed to do and, you know, sending it up the chain of command there. So it was kind of one of those situations where nobody could have known that the person at the center of this was also the person in charge.
Right. And it's like, well, what was the police chief doing, or the, you know, whoever the oversight body is? How come Billy Fields was allowed to run a drug and stolen property ring for as long as he did, other than just like brute force violence and threats?
Mm-hmm.
Goddamn. Well, he's in jail forever now. So good for him. Go die there.
Yeah, good for him and good for the family for finally getting some answers after so very long.
Right. Well, before we get going today, we have an exciting reminder for you all. I would say announcement, but I imagine most of you have already heard this. But if not, join us. We're going to solve some mysteries. We're going to see some USOs. We're going to see some UFOs. We're going to drink pina coladas, and we're going to have fun together.
All on a cruise ship.
On a cruise ship. I left the ship part out. My bad. Yes, November, we're going on a ship. I'm on a boat, motherfucker.
It's Crime Wave at Sea 2025, a one-of-a-kind true crime festival. It's November 3rd through 7th. We cannot wait. All your favorite creators live on stage, exclusive collabs, fan meetups, activities designed to connect you with other true crime fans. You might meet a bestie. You might meet the love of your life. You might meet a soulmate.
You might meet the love of your life. You might meet your Christy or your Heather on this trip. It might be the birth of your podcast.
Tommy or your Paris.
Yes.
You know,
or your McGruff.
Your McGruff. Yeah.
Are they going to let me take that on the ship?
Kraken. Are they going to let McGruff on the ship?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
No, he's banned from the high seas.
Not after last time. Well, we're also sailing straight through the Bermuda Triangle, so let's just slip dimensions together leave this all behind for sure. Tickets are on sale already right now. You got to go to crimewaveatsea.com/sinister to get your fan code. Fan codes are totally free to register then for the cruise. So go to crimewaveatsea.com/sinister and book now. Thanks to everybody that's booked so far, but there are limited seats, so make sure you get yours before they're gone.
Yeah, because it's not just us. It's Ed and Henry from Side Stories. It's Dan and I don't remember these shows.
It's right. It's in here. It's not just us. It's going to be Henry and Ed from Last Podcast Side Stories, Dan and Lynn from Scared to Death, Katie and Whitney from True Crime Campfire, and more. And like Christy said, maybe there'll be a Kraken on the high seas for us. I've
got my tentacles crossed for all eight of them for a Kraken to show up.
Yeah, go to crimewaveatsea.com/sinister and get that fan code.
Well, if you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next or dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content, such as Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court, True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime, Heather's Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed, and Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
Well, and if you're not entirely sure what it's all about, we also offer free trials. You can join for free for a week at any tier, check out the perks, and cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. And just binge listen to all of those segments that Christy just listed off. Not to mention, what else do you get when you sign up for Patreon?
Well, just for signing up for free, you also get a bonus content released to you once a month. And then on tiers, you could get an ad-free episode. On tiers, you get ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As held the third Thursday of every month, quarterly live bonus content, weekly audio bonus content, mini-sodes, merch discounts, and most importantly, a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
Truly, truly. Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out Sinisterhood merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show, submit your odd but true tales for Freaky Friday, and send in whatever bizarre or hilarious video you want us to live react to during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream on our YouTube channel, Sinisterhood Podcast, every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central Time. You'll also find fun things on our website like topic-based playlists and all the information for Crime Wave at Sea 2025.
Ahoy, mateys. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us on TikTok at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episode, live streams, and more. And if you are looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, or you want to treat yourself to like a little pep talk, a little hey from us, book yourself a cameo now. From happy birthdays to birth announcements to congrats on whatever accomplishment you have, we would love to create a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent. Not only is it an incredibly thoughtful gift, but it's perfect for when you don't want to deal with the hassles of shopping and you're looking for a last minute thing to send along.
It's come in clutch for me on several occasions where I'm like, what can get to me in 24 hours?
Well, Christy, where are you at on the computer?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts: Maddie Harris,
Hannah Biggs,
Stacey Burnett,
Jeremy,
Molly Cook,
Ashley Damon,
Charles A. Starnes,
Bria,
Jenny Richards,
Carly Grindstaff,
and Olive Oil.
Thank you so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you all. We sincerely appreciate your love and support. We hope we pronounce your names correctly. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Sinister.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Okay. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.